This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Folks, welcome back to the iHealth channel, iHealth Radio, with your host, the one and only Hurricane Age. Today, I'm taking you back to a discussion that's always interesting and it's always on the table. That is the discussion of cannabis and how it all works in this world and the benefits and so on and so forth. Maybe even when I talk a little bit of legislation and how it all appears in the U.S., because it's a lot of, I would say, controversial stuff that goes in there and back in and forth. You know, there's a little bit of a lot of stuff. But today with me, I have Dr. Joseph Rosado, who is a physician, but he works on more of a natural path, you know, of things and alternative medicine. And we're going to, you know, get a little bit of a real deep dive on the world of cannabis with him today. Doctor, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here with you this evening.
Well, the pleasure is mine. And again, cannabis is not something that we have not covered, but it is a topic that's still a little bit less known to the public in a lot of areas. And people have questions about it all the time. And it's a moving system. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on with it. And it's not where it needs to be. I think it's a long way from home, if you want to call it that way. I mean, there's still a lot of work to be done in that world. There's skeptics. Does it work? What is it? I mean, is it, you know, there's legal ramifications, and we're going to talk about that. And I think you and I just briefly just chat a little bit about how that works. So it would be ideal, doctor, first of all, just to guide us. I mean, you are a medical doctor. What got you into the world of cannabis in the first place? I mean, you're a physician. Not a lot of them. I mean, typically doctors would rather prescribe regular drugs, right? I mean, that's typical. But going your path, you know, it's definitely a good angle or a different angle. And I know actually personally have had discussions about how it is good in terms of pain management and other types of treatment. So let's just take it back to your story and how you got into this world of doctor into the world of cannabis, and you mixed it up, and how does it work in the real life? Plus, also, I wanted to just add in for our audiences is that you are an author. You put 7 books, if I'm not mistaken, right? So we'll talk about those books as well. And, you know, so let's take it from there. Doctor, tell us a little bit about the story.
Sure, absolutely. So I'm an atypical doctor, and I'll explain why. My journey in medicine began when I was the ripe young age of 16. Yes, 1/6. In 1978, I knew early on I wanted to be a physician. And so I was in a high school that had a work study program. And so the first job I got at the age of 15 was janitorial. And I'm thinking to myself, this is not going to get me where I want to be. And fortunately, the school that I was going to was offering a semester course to become a certified nurse's aide, an orderly. And so I enrolled in that course as an elective. And I completed that the second half of my sophomore year. So I was 15 and a half when I completed the course, was May of 78. And so that's when I turned 18. I'm sorry, I turned 16 in June of that year. So I had to wait 1 month. And once I turned 16, I was eligible to work as an orderly. So I started working as an orderly in an assisted living facility. I was the only guy working in an assisted living facility. So my job was lifting and moving patients every 2 hours so that they didn't get the bed sores. Well, I didn't sign up for that. I wanted to learn. I wanted to learn more. I didn't want to be some grunt. So I found that there was a position available at one of the local hospitals to be a transportation orderly, working in an x-ray department. So I applied, I got that job, which was great because during downtime, I was able to hang out with the radiologists, the guys that read the x-rays. And while they were reading the x-rays, I was listening and watching what they were reading. So I was learning radiological anatomy and anatomy from these physicians looking at x-rays. So my junior and senior year in high school, I was literally dually enrolled. I was working, learning from these doctors, but also doing my stuff in school. I graduated high school, went to Mexico because I wanted to be a physician, got sick as a dog. They sent me to the United States to die, literally, because I contracted Salmonella, Shigella, amoebic dysentery. I had kidney infections. I had typhoid fever. I mean, what didn't I have?
Oh boy.
I was there exactly 1 month, and in that 1 month, I had been in the hospital a total of 7 to 10 days. And towards the end, there's this lady that had ingratiated herself with me, and she went to the doctors and said, I want to assume responsibility for this young man. And they're like, no, you don't want to do that. We're waiting for his fever to break from 40 degrees Celsius, which here is 105 degrees Fahrenheit. We're waiting for it to break to 39, and once it does, we're sending his butt back to the United States so he could die in his home because we don't want a statistic here. Well, needless to say, I didn't die. Fast forward 2 years later, I became an EMT, emergency medical technician, then went on, became a paramedic, did that for about 6 years, got burnt out being on the street, and so a pilot program was being started where they were taking critical care nurses, respiratory therapists, and paramedics and training them to be cath lab technicians, to work in a heart cath lab with cardiologists. Well, I applied, I was accepted, I completed the training, was hired, and for 2 years, all I did was cardiology with these cardiologists. Again, learning from these guys. And we were doing cutting-edge stuff. There were like, 22 different cardiologists, 4 different labs, and we were doing procedures left and right. So I was getting a lot of great information. I was in college, pre-med, microbiology major. Life was already planned, except for one little thing. I wasn't planning on having a major car accident that rendered me partially paralyzed from the waist down because when I got hit from the rear, it caused a fracture in my spine. And that vertebrae collapsed like a pancake. And that compressed the nerves going down from my waist down. And so, needless to say, I'm freaking out pretty bad. But that situation only lasted 24, 48 hours. I started getting pins and needles back. And so the orthopedist looked at me and said, well, our job is done. There's nothing else for us to do. I'm like, well, wait a minute. I'm in my, this was 1987. I'm like, I'm 25 years old. I'm in really good physical shape. I can't be okay in your eyes when I'm not feeling okay. He's like, well, there's nothing more that we can do. So I went to see a chiropractor who I had seen for a sports-related injury. And he was the one that told me I had the fracture in my spine. The guys in the hospital missed it. And so he's like, let's get to work. 2 weeks later, all the numbness and tingling was gone. I was back to feeling somewhat normal. And I was so impressed with what he did with his hands that I decided not to go to medical school. I decided to go to chiropractic school. So I went to chiropractic school in spring of 1989. And then from there, I graduated chiropractic school, practiced for 5 years, got frustrated with the limited scope of practice. By this time, I was married and I had twin daughters that were a year old, and I decided to go to medical school. So, as you can tell, medicine was my sixth career.
I have to say, I mean, listening to your story, first of all, I want to just say kudos to you. I mean, from an early on, and I think for people that are watching, if you do have an ambition, you have a goal in life, it doesn't matter. You got to work towards it, and there's a lot of ways to do it. And you've tried since 15 years old. I mean, you were already like, hey, this is not for me. I'm not doing the janitorial thing. Not there's nothing wrong with it.
No, but
But certainly at that age, seeing that you wanted to be, on the field of medicine, and you kind of find your way in a lot of ways. And every single step that you've taken there was pretty much a learning curve towards where you are today. And frankly, I mean, a good doctor should be able to actually, learn all these little tricks, and have them under, their sleeves to be able to do even more. I mean, you are, I would call, a more complete, provider out there because you have a lot of angles that you can use. So you're not just talking regular medicine. You can see it from, the chiropractic, world, from orthopedic side, from, even the emergency stuff. As a paramedic, you see a lot of stuff. You also have the history of caring for elderly and things like that, and people who are actually in need of care. And listen, I just as mentioned, my mom, passed, recently, and she was in the hospital. I mean, that work that you've done of helping people and trying to get them, a little bit at ease where they're really not in a comfortable, position and situation, that's great. So again, I just wanted to give you the preps here. I mean, you know, I mean, that chapeau, as they say, hats off to you, man, for the work you've done and just for the story and the history and the, I guess, the determination. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, you don't see a lot of people that really pursue whatever they want in their life in the way you did it. And again, it's a great opportunity for people that are watching and listening, no matter where you are. If you have something that you're really going after, you go after it. Now, this is not our topic, but motivation and inspiration is part of our mission as well. And so whatever I get a little bit of a nugget there that I can plug in, I throw it in there. And I think you just, just covered it all. And like I said, I mean, listen, there are a lot of, I've had a lot of doctors and, everybody's got a different path into medicine. Some just literally they want it, they go for it, they do the med school and they're out there and they do their practice. But you've had a lot of lefts and rights and ups and downs.
Yeah, no, I started literally from the ground floor and worked my way up. And so while in medical school, in pharmacology class, that's where I learned about the endocannabinoid system and the cannabinoid receptors and how we all produce cannabis. And so that was my introduction. But, we started with that, but immediately they went to the traditional, myths of, but it's a gateway drug and it leads to harder drug use and it's addictive and blah, 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 blah. And so I went home that night, did some research, did some reading, discovered that it was not addictive. It causes psychological dependence, but not physiological dependence. It doesn't create that level of addiction like alcohol, cigarettes, even coffee can cause. But put in the back burner because where I was, it was illegal. We're talking about 1999, 3 years after it was decriminalized in California. So it was still relatively new in the United States. So, but it was another tool in my toolbox that I put in the back burner. So I graduated medical school, took my boards, took my exams, did my training. Everything was golden. I knew I was a great physician, but I was a crappy business person. So I got an MBA in healthcare management. So now I'm the full package. I'm like everyone's worst enemy. The doctors see me as the enemy because I'm an administrator. The administrator hate me because I'm a clinician and I'm going to defend my fellow colleagues. So I'm like this rebel between the rock and the hard place. So fast forward 2010, when they decriminalized cannabis in Arizona, one of my best friends reaches out to me and says, "Hey, Joe, the law is available now in Arizona. I've got property. I want to grow some cannabis. I want to set up a dispensary, but I need a medical doctor to be my medical director." I'm like, say less, let's go. So we get everything set up. At that time, his son and my twin daughters were this, are this, which are the same age, were 14. His wife was like, you know, I don't feel comfortable us getting involved in the in the cannabis industry because our kids are 14. We're telling them not to do drugs, but here we're going to get involved in cannabis. So he's like, you need to call him and tell him. So she calls me up and I'm like, look, you know, this isn't Joe and Don selling weed on the corner. You know, this is Dr. Rosado, Dr. Dearth. You know, he's a chiropractor. I'm a medical doctor. You know, together we're going to crush it. We're going to do really, really good work for all these people. Well, happy wife, happy life. It was done right there and then. No, do not pass go. Do not collect $200. We're done. Go to jail.
You took us to Monopoly for those that I guess the people that may not know the generation of the online stuff. Yeah, that's funny. I mean, that's a good one.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
But I love that happy life, happy wife. I mean, happy wife, happy life. I mean, it's true. And you got to do what you got
He
to
had to live with her. I didn't. So I'm like, okay, no problem. Fast forward to 2014, then my state, Florida, starts talking about decriminalizing cannabis. So I'm like, here's my opportunity. And so I reached out to the individual that was running the campaign. He put me in touch with the campaign manager. Campaign manager put me on with the Bureau of Speakers. And literally, the rest was history. It did not pass in 2014 in the state of Florida. We went back to the drawing board, but that was to my advantage because it gave me more time to be prepared for when we did have the laws and we did have it passed, that I was able to hit the ground running and be able to open up my office doors and start getting people in. And that's exactly what happened. I was the first in the greater Central Florida area to recommend to an adult that had brain cancer, and I was the first in the state to recommend to a child who had a brain cancer, who had a head and neck tumor. And so that was on mainstream media, that was on social media, that was on printed media. And so the people in the entire state saw what I was doing. And so people started driving from all over the state to my office to get the medical cannabis. And since then, as you mentioned earlier, I've written 7 books on the topic. I've traveled all over the world, literally, to countries that were not and are not favorable to the use of cannabis, like Fiji, like Malaysia. I went to Thailand before they had laws in Thailand. To Mexico before they had laws in Mexico, to Costa Rica before they had laws in Costa Rica, training doctors, speaking to lay people, speaking to advocates, because I was advocating before I was recommending. So as a pioneer, I've taken that work all over. And so that's what has led me to where I am today. And so that's how I got involved in the cannabis and how I've grown with it.
Well, you know, you stole the word. I was going to say you're a pioneer. You beat me to it. You already know
Yeah.
that. That's good. But actually, true fact. I mean, you were there, you know, as history was being made in terms of the introduction of cannabis. What you tried to do in Arizona, and you said it. I mean, California was kind of first to get it all started. But now I think plenty of states, and you know,
40.
are yeah. So it's we're getting better. We
Yeah,
still got a few, you know, I guess
40 of 50
slackers, but.
states, and then and the U.S. territories like Guam, U.S. Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico. You know, they have medical, and Guam has adult use and medical.
I mean, again, I'm in Jersey. I think we have even recreation now, if I'm
Yeah,
thinking
Jersey is adult
yeah.
use. Yeah, that whole northeastern portion of the United States is dual. There's both medical and adult use. So New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, etc.
Well, I do want to touch on that, like, just the why, medical versus just, or recreational, and, why are we not going to make it recreational for those people? Because fact is, I mean, you don't have to have a prescription for one thing if it's available to you. But there's a lot of discussion. Again, I don't know the politics behind it or the technical world, that goes behind it.
Personally, it's and I always say this from stage, there's no such thing as adult use or recreational. It's all medical. The people that are using cannabis are using it because they know that they have a medical issue and the cannabis helps them with that issue. Whether it's anxiety, whether it's lack of sleep, whether it's depression, whether it's lack of focus, ADD, ADHD, chronic pain, they know that when they use cannabis, it helps them with whatever ailments they have. And as a result of that, they utilize the cannabis for that reason. Again, because of the endocannabinoid system, we all produce cannabis, but when we have issues, our levels go down and we need to replenish that. We need to make that up and build it up. And that's why we use it.
Also,
And
doctor,
so,
yeah, go
yeah, go
ahead.
ahead.
No, I was going to ask, so thank you for clarifying that, because that's a big piece, right? We think that recreational is someone who wants just to get high and get, a nice little peace of mind and relax.
No, the only
And
difference between the two is with medical, you have to see a physician to certify you. With adult use, you can just walk into the dispensary. Now, as a resident of a state that is only medical, and we did vote for adult use last year in our elections, which I voted no, and I'll explain why. The way it was written, I didn't like the way that it was written. I'm a big advocate and proponent of the use of adult use cannabis for financial reasons in the state, and I'll explain. In the state of Florida, we don't pay a state tax. We pay a sales tax, but we don't pay a state tax. Why? Because it's a tourist attraction. The
Let's
whole state is a tourist attraction. It's a peninsula. People from your neck of the woods come to my neck of
see.
the woods, particularly around this time of the year, because you guys have this nasty white thing that falls from the sky and the temperature drops below a certain comfortable level. Okay? And so all you guys want to come down here and party in my warm state. Now, if we had an adult use program and you guys came down here from Jersey, and you went to our dispensaries, you'd be paying anywhere between 25 and 45% sales tax because
Wow.
it's a luxury tax. I've been to California, I've been to Portland, Oregon, I've been to Missouri, I've been to Nevada, and Massachusetts, and every one of those states, I've purchased cannabis. Denver, Colorado, I've purchased cannabis. And I've gotten hit with anywhere between 18 and 45% sales tax because I am not a resident. When you are a resident and you have a medical cannabis card, you don't pay a sales tax because it's medicine. When you go to a pharmacy, whether it's CVS, Walgreens, Walmart, Rite Aid, Costco, Sam's, you don't pay a sales tax for medicine. So when it is a medical program, and you buy your medical cannabis, you don't pay a sales tax. That's the benefit of being a resident of a state that has a program. You have your medical cannabis card, you get your medical cannabis, you don't pay a sales tax. Everybody that comes to your state and wants to buy it, all bets are off. Pay me the money. So we have in our state millions of people that come to visit to swim in our shark-infested waters to see a big rat and a big fish in Central Florida. You know what I'm talking about.
I work for the mouse, so the
You work for the mouse.
rat. Actually did.
So my college roommate worked for the mouse. He was goofy. He was one of the characters.
And I was Aladdin, so
Really?
well, close enough. It was before Aladdin the movie, but I had the same dress code, so I can tell you
So
that.
people are coming in and spending hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions and billions of dollars, into our economy. If we had an adult use program, we'd be the richest state in the United States. But we don't yet. But eventually, and so from a fiscal point of view, I'm all for it, absolutely. From a physician point of view, I'm going to have patients. There's going to be patients that need a physician's guidance. I take care of children. I take care of children that have chronic debilitating conditions like cancer, like intractable seizures, like autism. And they cannot walk into an adult use dispensary and rely on a budtender on the other side of the counter to explain to them what to use and how to use it in conjunction with all the medicines that they're on. They can't. It's not going to work. Or the 70 or 80-year-old that's got Parkinson's disease or Alzheimer's disease or cancer. It's not going to happen. So those people will forever need a physician to guide them and direct them. But somebody that has been medicating for a while, that knows what works, that knows how to use it, I'm of no real benefit to them. But as a resident, get your card. That way you don't get raped by the state tax.
Well, so you actually, I have to say, maybe we did like four or five shows about cannabis, already in the last few years. And this is the first time we actually touched on the financial aspect of it and the legislative part of it and how it all works, the recreational versus not, and so on and so forth. Because I mean, you really give us I would say it's a clear cut for us, at least visually, and even for those people that are listening, that to understand how it all works between one and the other and what the conditions. I mean, technically they're the same. You can get the same medicines and everything, or the same, I guess, products, and they'll probably do the same, but the idea is like, well, I can just know what to do and just get me a couple of, I don't know, oil, edibles, whatever that might be, and I can get, nice. By the way, I've actually dabbled into it myself, not for use, but for bringing it to the insurance space and making it as part of the benefit package, if you want to call, because my background is insurance. And so I work for the for like the insurance companies, and one of the things that we've always done is that try to have some benefit,
alternative
enhancements
medicines, right? Yeah.
For alternative. And it's been always a difficult task, and it still isn't, because we're federal, most of these programs are federal funded. So and since the federal government hasn't actually adopted the use yet, so it's been a little hard, road to actually get it on. So we try to get it done for pain management, things like that. I mean, there's always something you want to see, like what else can we provide our members with that can help them in their journey, as opposed to drugs. I mean, this is an alternative way to treat things. And we haven't gotten so far, any luck in there, but I mean, we will continue
Well,
working on that path.
across the state line, New York, the insurance commissioner for the state of New York allows for the payment of the doctor's visit to be paid for by the insurance company for medical cannabis visit. They don't pay for the medical cannabis yet, but they do pay for the doctor's visit. Most other states do not allow that at all. It's a straight cash business. But the other state that's not too far away from you, Connecticut, because I see a lot of snowbirds, they are up there and they tell me how they get upcharged on their products. So they go to the medical dispensary and they see what the prices are. Then they go into the adult use. Just because it's flower, they automatically upcharge them by $10. Then they hit them with, some type of a fee, and then the state sales tax. When you compare, what they would pay $45 to $65 here in the state of Florida, they're paying between $120 and $150 in Connecticut. So again, it is financially lucrative if done correctly and properly.
Well, doctor, thank you. So before we get into the medical piece of it and like the deep dive on the clinical side, right? How it works and the whole thing and the benefits, also the types of diseases and illnesses that can be really a good for. I want to just, because I know you mentioned legislation and how so what was that? I mean, was there a rough road there in terms of like getting the advocacy through? Because I mean, I know states have tried years and years, and many have, I mean, recently, obviously, we've seen a lot more, get into the I guess the trend, right? But for someone who's, you know, really pioneered and been, you know, on the front, I guess the front of the lead of this endeavor in this states of ours, right? You know, it's a very and Florida, you know, you would think, I mean, Florida is kind of an interesting state. I mean, it's very progressive. It's got a different, you know, I guess political system
It's
and
predominantly a red state. We have pockets of blue, but it's pretty red. And so when in 2014 and 2016, when we were promoting the decriminalization, our then governor, Rick Scott, who then became Senator Rick Scott, had a major issue with cannabis because and this is from his mouth. I'm not speaking out of turn. I'm not speaking out of school or whatever. His mom and his brother both had issues with addiction. And so in his mind, his perception was and is that cannabis is a gateway drug, and both his mother and brother became addicts because they started using cannabis. Well, the one and only time he and I met each other face to face in the same room, I shared with him that I would bet him my next month's salary that his brother and his mother drank alcohol before they smoked cannabis, which is a legal drug. Highly regulated, highly taxed, but it's still legal. I know they didn't start smoking a joint. I know they started having a beer or a glass of wine or a bottle of wine or Mad Dog 2020 or some other crazy shit.
I'm in another 300 million people, right?
Yeah. So don't even go there. But anyway, so when we voted, what we voted for was Amendment 2. What was signed into law was Senate Bill 8A, which didn't look anything like what we voted for. There was an issue with the edibles. We didn't have any edibles in 2017. Flower was not allowed. There was no.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
No combustion allowed, so no lighting up, so it was all vape cartridges. And so the way around it, what people were doing was they were creating these pods with bud inside the pod to use a tabletop volcano to do dry vaping. Well, what the patients were doing, they were buying those pods, they popped the pod, and now they had the flower, they had the bud, they ground it up and they smoked it. So that they were breaking the law, but they were still using state-issued flower. The gentleman that began the campaign to decriminalize cannabis got pissed off and said, no, that's not what we voted for, and sued the state of Florida. So fast in 2019, when Rick Scott left office, ran and became senator of the state, Ron DeSantis became the next governor, also a Republican. And so he approached John Morgan and said, look, if you lift the lawsuit you have against the state of Florida, I'll free the flower. And so Morgan said, bet, let's go. And so they did, and he did, and so that's when we've got flower in the state of Florida. So it's been a process throughout all of this, and it's knowing how to manage and work things out. I told you earlier, you know, when we were off camera, that I had just gotten back from Wisconsin. I went to Wisconsin to speak at the Indigenous BizCon, because in nine states of the United States, tribes have dispensaries, and they're seeing the future of using cannabis and having cannabis on the tribe. One, because they got the gaming down. They're making bank on gaming. Some are making bank on petroleum because they have oil in and around their tribes. The green rush, they want to go for that green dollar. And so I was there to speak. Wisconsin has no laws. It's illegal to have cannabis. Well, they've just now proposed a bill. The Republicans have proposed a bill to decriminalize cannabis in the state of Wisconsin. Wisconsin is a purple state. It's pretty evenly
I like
balanced. It's red and blue. They're pretty even.
that.
But it was the Republicans that wrote the law, this potential bill, this potential law to allow for the use of cannabis. So I was up there educating tribal leaders to be able to utilize this in their respective communities to be able to help with their number one problem, which is addiction. There's a high level of alcohol abuse, alcohol use. There's a high level of opiate use disorders. There's a lot of suicide going on. And so by implementing, utilizing the cannabis to support and address their chronic pain, their anxiety, their depression, their post-traumatic stress disorder, their intergenerational trauma that they've suffered generation after generation that's being passed on cellularly from great-grandfather to grandfather to father to son to grandson to great-grandson and on and on and on. So I'm still advocating. Because of my track record, I'm being called and to go in and speak and lobby and support the movement for the decriminalization in different areas and regions.
Doctor, I mean, you're really touching on an interesting topic, because now you went to, like, for example, tribal areas, right? And you're talking about, folks that have actually used, I guess flower and
Plant
natural
medicine, yeah.
plant medicine. It's part of history, right? It's like, that's the first thing that they've got. I mean, worldwide, that's what we used back in the days, right? I mean, you used plants for everything, including for pain management, and
Well,
some of
even
it
here in the
was.
United States, in the mid-1800s, cannabis was our part of our pharmacopoeia. Pharmacists were filling prescriptions to use cannabis for pain, for anxiety, for insomnia.
I
But
didn't know that,
in
but
the late 1930s, we had the first drug czar, a guy by the name of Harry Anslinger. In fact, when I was flying down, I was on Southwest Airlines, plugged to Southwest Airlines. I don't get any money from them. You don't either. But I flew them down, and I watched the movie on my way on my flight down with Robert De Niro about Frank Costello, the big mobsters back in the day. And there was a part in the movie where they had Harry Anslinger there. They had somebody playing him about how he was, dealing with the prohibition, because he was against everything. He was against alcohol, he was against the drugs, and he was against the cannabis. And he was the one, it was through him that they created the movie Reefer Madness. It came out in 1937, and on the playbill and on the billboard and advertising announcing the movie, they were saying, if our white women smoke this marijuana, which is a racist term, the correct term is cannabis, but he said if they smoke this marijuana, then they're going to want to have sex with darkies, jazz singers, and Mexicans.
Damn. Ooh, okay.
That was his
That's
point of
heavy
view.
stuff.
Yeah, then fast forward to 1970, Richard Nixon, who also had issues with black and brown people, as well as Jews and everybody else, they had the Controlled Substance Act, where they made cannabis a Schedule I drug, federally illegal. Fast forward to the early 80s, Ronald Reagan's wife, Nancy, just say no, in the TV commercials, this is your brain, this is your brain on drugs, where they would take an egg and they would crack it, and it's like, this is your brain, and then they throw the egg onto a hot skillet and it was cooking. It's like, this is your brain on drugs. So that's the whole propaganda that's been going on. So when they imposed this Marijuana Tax Act in the 30s, people said, fuck that. You had the paper mill, the paper company, the clothing, the cotton. All these people were against cannabis because you could use hemp, you could grow hemp and make it and use it for textiles, create cement, make clothing, make ropes using the fiber from the hemp. So multiple industries were going to be affected by it. By eliminating it, now other industries flourished.
Well,
Oh, it's deep, man. This shit goes deep.
I'm telling you, like, I want to go into the medical part of this thing, but I it's so intriguing to even understand the history because to your point, it is a plant. It is good for you. It's been there. And the propaganda shows, and I think that's what we think, and I think the majority of people still think, associate, the use of cannabis in general with drug and addiction and people going nuts and doing crazy things and criminology and all this stuff, right? Crime. So really it's not what it is, but it's been almost a introduction of a historic introduction to how we can perceive this thing, and therefore that's today's mindset. That's how we see it. I think you and a lot of people that have been advocating for the introduction again of cannabis into the mainstream through medicinal stuff or even recreational stuff has changed things now. So we see more of it. Obviously now with podcasts and talk shows and things like there's more discussion about this. So it's coming, more books are being written, more. So it's shedding a light on the history and it's kind of removing some of that cloud and coverage, that was, kind of put on, I guess, on purpose, based on our discussion here. I mean, there's always interests that are sometimes conflicting, and therefore, one actually is not gonna be there. And frankly, I mean, I've even had discussions before about how the tobacco industry also was kind of not really very for it because they kind of it's like the enemy number one in terms of that, industry wise, right? So I mean, there's a lot of that stuff, and again, we try to keep the show without any alienating group versus the other, whatever, but sometimes facts are facts and we have
Facts are facts. You, like, like you know,
to.
like they say in my country, you can't cover the sky with one hand.
I listen, you can't. I mean, unless you close your eyes.
Yeah, you can, and then you close your eyes, and then now you're really screwed, So,
Yeah, the ostrich effect, right?
yeah, exactly.
So doctor, so here's the thing. I mean, hemp, you meant cannabis, the key word. I mean, now you mentioned hemp, and sometimes we hear hemp, as a product line, and there's a lot of products that come from it. We also hear CBDs and other types of things. But before I get into the difference between
Sure.
all these and marijuana now, like, listen, I'm from Morocco originally, so there's hashish, which is I guess the cousin of whatever cannabis is, if not the same. I mean, it's just another plant that has the same effects, if not, and it's more widely used, I guess, in Europe and things like that. So it's kind of like, I mean, anyone who has been to Amsterdam, you would know that if you get to the red district, I mean, there's quite a bit of a cloud there that you can actually test and taste in whatever you want, and in edible format, cakes and drinks and you name it, right? So it's been like it's out there, but it's not out there. I mean, there's a lot of controversy about, this whole thing, right? But the difference between these things is one thing, and also you mentioned earlier something about that, like, we have it, like our body produces this. So let's get into the technical piece. Like, we are humans, we have hormones, we have things, we have, endocrinal, I guess, parts of our body that actually generate certain things for us. This is one of the natural things that we have that actually operates, and so it's not against the body. And also I want you to touch on the idea is, how does it really work in our body? And it's not as addictive as you said earlier. It's good for the mind, but it's got no physical, aspect of it, or vice versa. You'll clarify that for us. So let's talk about those things, and then we can get into like the differences, and and we go from there.
Sure, absolutely. So we all have in biology, basic high school biology, we learned about the different organ systems in the body. We learned about the cardiac system, how the heart and the blood vessels work. We learned about the respiratory system, how, the nose with the lungs, with the exchange of gases. We were taught the digestive system, from the mouth to the butthole. in that long tube and all the organs that are affiliated and associated and how it works to break all that stuff down. We learned all those organs, but we never talked about the endocannabinoid system that is found in every one of those major organ systems, because there are cannabinoid receptors. There are receptors all over our body, from the tops of our heads to the bottom, to the soles of our feet, and from our skin in. So we have receptors all over our body. In some areas, we have a predominance of certain types of receptors, and in other areas, we have a predominance of other receptors. But we have these receptors all over the body. This concept was introduced in the 80s. The first endocannabinoid was discovered and named in 1992. It was discovered by Rafael Mechoulam, an Israeli scientist at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, and his right-hand man, Professor Lumir Hanush, who's the one that wrote the foreword to my first book, Hope and Healing: The Case for Cannabis. The Professor Hanush named it anandamide, from the Sanskrit word ananda, which means bliss. That was 1992. 3 years later, in 1995, they discovered the second endocannabinoid, which is 2-AG. So now we have two endocannabinoids that were identified and named. Then they began to study what the function was and how they became active in the body. When you have any type of stress, whether it's a good stress or a bad stress, exercise, pain, anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, anything like that, it causes what's called in medicine or in action potential. It causes a chain of events to occur. And within that chain of events that goes on, different channels are opened up and different electrolytes are released. So you have calcium channels, you have sodium channels, you have potassium channels. These channels open up, and then neurotransmitters, these specialized chemicals, are also released. And it's this system goes on, continues, and that's how the endocannabinoids are formed. And they work on the different receptors. As we age, or as we have dis-ease, lack of ease, our levels drop. They are depleted. And so we have to replenish that. We have to make up for that. And that's why we use cannabis to replenish that. A physician on the West Coast by the name of Ethan Rousseau coined the term clinical endocannabinoid deficiency. And his hypothesis began with the thought, okay, if somebody has low levels of serotonin or noradrenaline, norepinephrine, they suffer with depression. And that's why medications like SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or SNRI, serotonin norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors, work on those specialized chemicals to prevent them from dropping, to avoid depression. Or if somebody has low levels of dopamine, they develop Parkinson's disease. Or if they have low levels of acetylcholine, they develop Alzheimer's. Okay? Granted, Alzheimer's disease is a different animal, but these chemicals are related to these conditions. So his thought was, what happens if we have low levels of endocannabinoids? What occurs? And the three conditions that came up first were migraine headaches, irritable bowel syndrome, and fibromyalgia. Then he went on and investigated even further, and then came back and said any chronically debilitating condition can lead to clinical endocannabinoid deficiency. So people with post-traumatic stress disorder, they've done clinical trials and shown that people that suffer with or from PTSD have lower endocannabinoid levels than people that are comparable to their age. So they even did a study on individuals that had been part of the 9/11 situation in New York, and they got a group of people that were comparable in sex and age to these people, but were not exposed directly to that incident. And they discovered that the people that were exposed to 9/11 that were there, their endocannabinoids were in the toilet as compared to those that were had not been exposed. So that's the whole thing. So that's in essence what we're treating. I'm not treating a named condition. I'm treating the
deficiency.
The deficiency of the clinical endocannabinoids, and by replenishing that, we are restoring the body's balance, or as we say in medicine, homeostasis, to maintain that level. Now, how we go about doing it, that all depends on what the person has, and then what structures we can use to better offset their problem. Because the plant has, as you mentioned earlier, THC and CBD. Those are the two most commonly known phytocannabinoids. Phyto meaning plant, cannabinoids meaning that it works on the cannabinoid receptors. So CBD, THC are the most commonly known because they are the greatest quantity in the plant. But we have others. We have CBG, we have CBN, we have THCV. There's a host of other phytocannabinoids. But we also have things that are called terpenes that are found in all plants. Terpenes are what gives the smell and taste to the plant, but it also has medicinal value. So things like linalool that are found in lavender and sweet basil are also helpful for people that suffer with anxiety. Or beta-caryophyllin that's found in hops or in black pepper or in oregano or in rosemary helps with anxiety, helps with depression, helps with pain, helps with muscle spasms, helps with insomnia. So now somebody comes in and says, yeah, I suffer with insomnia, doc. Okay, well then, because you have insomnia, these are the products that I would recommend. These are the chemovars or the strains. And strain is an incorrect term because strains don't exist in the plant world. That's in the bacteria and virus world. In the plant world, we have, you know, a family, a genus, a species, a subspecies. And so from there, we implement and say, okay, this is what you want to use, this is how you want to use it, and this is why you want to use it that way.
Ooh, that's quite a bit there. So, but that's good stuff, because I think it for our audiences, even for me, I mean, you're breaking it down to deep science level, and understanding what it is and what it's not. And certainly, as you said, you know, it is really just to enhance and kind of maximize the ability of the body to restore itself, and therefore it prevents all these types of diseases or stresses and whatever they might be, right? Now, and I love that you actually broke down the CBD and CHD, CTA, well, CHD, right?
That's yeah, CHD, uh-huh.
Okay, so it's kind of like interesting, because someone who has any of those conditions, right? I mean, they come to you, sometimes they go to a regular doctor. Typically, they give them pain management or pain medicine, so regular drugs. Uh-huh. Now, you know, I want you to touch on, you know, how, I mean, obviously, listen, I'm not a big fan of using drugs, and I have to tell you, my mom, you know, one of the conditions, you know, that caused her, you know, I guess demise was actually a little extra dose of some of the drugs that didn't work with her, and, you know, acute kidney failure, right? So I'm not a big fan of drugs, because they do affect the kidneys, in you know, any one of them can have some impact, liver, this, that, the other. So now, sometimes we need them, but side to side or side by side comparison, right? Someone has similar problems or, you know, illnesses. They come to a doctor. Some will prescribe the standard drugs, mm-hmm. but you have the ability to prescribe something different that has less, I guess, impact. So let's talk about the impact, you know, one versus the other, and how do they work in the body? I mean, certainly you're talking about how they improve, you know, the levels, the homeostasis, but how do they really impact the body in general? Because I think, you know, based on my knowledge, The use of cannabis is almost benign. There's nothing to it in terms of the body. It doesn't have
And no one's ever died from it.
Exactly. So that enough said, right? I guess, right? But really, the drugs, you know, effects can be, and we it's not a, I mean, it's a known fact. I mean, you're watching a drug ad, you know, you're gonna see, like, you know, all the, I mean, the, in less
all
than
the side effects,
they blur the stuff, and most of them fatal this, fatal that, and whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like scary just to hear it, right? You know, but to your point, nothing. I mean, maybe someone said, well, someone can be high and they drive themselves into a wall or a tree, you know. Now let's talk about that, like, you know, the impact on the body and the dangers of it, you know, because that's, I think, something that people would always, you know, like, well, I don't want to do this because I want the addiction. I don't want to have any illnesses or something or side mm-hmm. effects that can come. So let's talk about that part of it.
Sure. So again, most of the people that come to my office for medical cannabis, the general consensus is pretty much the same. Exactly what you just said. I don't want to be on medicine. I don't like to take pills. I want something natural. And it's not people that are using cannabis presently. They are naive. And I'll ask them, have you tried this? No. So what makes you so sure it's going to work? And their response is, I hope it does. I've done research. I've talked to some of my friends. I talked to some of my family members. They rave about it. I've seen how much better they're doing. And today, I started a veteran who has a traumatic brain injury. He was injured in combat, and he's got issues with his brain. His cognitive levels are slow. He's very forgetful. His moods are all over the place. He's on 10 different medications. Hates being on all these medications because the side effects are worse than the actual condition that he has. And one of his buddies from combat, who's also my patient, he noticed the difference in this. You know, the guy I saw today noticed the difference in his buddy's behavior. His marriage is better. He's a better dad. He's a better husband. He's a better friend. He's not flying off the handle. He's sleeping through the night. His pain is under control. And he's not on all these medications causing all these side effects. And so he came in and said, and I asked him, how experienced are you? He's like, not very. He's like, I may have done it when I was a kid, like when I was in high school, but then I got in the military. And I couldn't use it while I was in the military. Then he got out of the military and started working in the prison system in the state of Florida as a corrections officer, where he couldn't have a medical cannabis card, much less use it in, you know, from the, you know, the illegal black market. So he's been without cannabis all these years. Now, lo and behold, his combat buddy, his best friend, his life is changing for the better, but his own father, the guy that grounded my patient today when he was 16 because he found a nickel bag in his stuff in his room, the father every night eats a gummy because it helps him sleep. It helps him with his pain. So I asked him, I said, so you've not used it since you were in high school? He's like, no. Not since I was 16, 17 years of age. I haven't used cannabis anymore. I'm like, okay. And I said, so why are you here? He's like, because I saw my best friend and my dad and how well they're doing. And I want that, and I don't want to be on these medicines. So that's really the reason. They don't want to be on these synthetic drugs that cause more problems than benefits. Now, are medicines necessary? Absolutely. Do I take conventional medicines? Yes, I do. You know, I have certain conditions that I need to use a specific medication to help with my conditions. But you know what? I also use cannabis in conjunction with those medications, and I don't need to use as much or any of those. And I've weaned myself off of having to use a lot of the medications that I was using. Now I use, you know, sparingly some medications, but my main source of medicine is the plant. And that's what I'm seeing primarily in my practice.
So that's great, breakdown here. I mean, it's as simple as that, folks. I mean, I'm listening here and you are, doctor, you're clearing that for us. I mean, you're taking this, it does a better job, with very little, I guess, side effects, if not none. I mean, to be honest with you, I think the only side effect I see when people actually on any cannabis is that they're just cool, mellow, and relax.
Yeah, you
I
get
mean,
five
is
guys.
that just
I had one patient tell me this joke, and it's not a joke. It's the reality. You get five guys together drinking any type of alcohol, a fight's going to break out because the beer muscles come out, and dick measuring behavior is going to start, and oh, that's it. You get five guys smoking cannabis, and a band's going to get started.
Yeah, that's just a mellow part. Well, so doc, so just to ease the minds of people, because some people say, well, you start with pot, then eventually it's not enough, and so again, I use the word pot here,
Yeah.
right? Which is the, I guess maybe it's not the real. That's
It's a
like the,
colloquial term.
it's the
Yeah.
colloquial term, yeah. But so, but that's the like the historic term, right? I mean, like we refer to someone pothead, and and
Yeah.
they just.
Pothead,
Yeah,
weed, yeah.
exactly. So,
Ganja.
but that I think, now that we know more, those words should be kind of like, removed from the dictionary because I think we have better terms to use now. But the idea is that someone, could say, well, you start with that, it's not enough, then you go to the heavier drugs. Maybe you get into some powder and other things that could be, very devastating to the body, and eventually you're just done, and you destroy yourself. Is that, something that is true? Is that a myth, or can it happen if someone is not, I guess, regulated or following the right instruction
Yeah.
with a provider?
And that's an excellent question. And yes, it can happen. What I mentioned earlier was it doesn't cause a physiological addiction. It doesn't create that dependence, like, for example, cocaine or alcohol or heroin, like an opiate. Okay. When somebody uses these types of medicines and you've used them for an extended period of time, you develop you create tolerance, and you need a higher dose to achieve the same effect. With cannabis, whether you smoke one joint or you smoke 10, the effect is pretty much going to be the same because your receptors are your receptors are your receptors. That's it. And if you stop using it for a day, those receptors reboot. And it's as if you've never been on that. So when somebody comes in and says, "You know what, doc? I think I'm developing a tolerance to the cannabis. It doesn't work the way it used to." My response to them is, "Take a cannabis holiday." And they're like, "Well, what's that?" I said, "Well, it's not going to Colorado for the weekend. That's not a cannabis holiday. A cannabis holiday
A
is taking,
break.
yeah, taking a break for 24 hours. Don't use it." And then, like a day or two later, go back and just do two or three hits and see what happens. Today, I saw one of those people that I made that recommendation to. She began to cut back on the use of the cannabis and started implementing different modes of administration. Instead of just smoking the cannabis, she was using edibles. She started using oils. She started using topicals, started using it differently. And all of a sudden, she started getting the benefits again. So now she knows, okay, if I mix and match all these different modes of administration, they're going to work on different receptors. They're going to work in a different way. I'm going to get more benefit from it. And so that's what I recommend. But anything can be addictive. I mean, social media, cell
Yeah.
phones, TV, food, gambling. I mean, going to the Indian nation and walking, the majority of the hotels are hotel casinos. And like all, you walk in, you go to the reception area, you check in. To get to your room, you got to go through the freaking casino. And the lights and the music and the sirens and the this and the that and the free drinks and the half-clad women, and you're like, "Oh, I want to be here." Now, that's not my thing. I work too hard for my money. So I walk through, but somebody else, they're going to stop and they're going to drop a couple hundred, couple thousand dollars. So anything can become, well, anyone can create a dependence or an addiction to a behavior. It doesn't necessarily have to be the chemical, it's just the actual behavior.
Doctor, I mean, I'm listening to you, but you're right. I mean, it's perfect, excellent points. And, one of them, I mean, we can go as simple as Coke, right? I mean, the drink, I mean, Coca-Cola, right? And, people are addicted to Coca-Cola. They're addicted to burgers. They're addicted to fries. They're addicted to sugar. I mean, we have a
Fast
joke about
food. And
fast
but
food.
the and if you look at the review, like
Oh
that
my God,
journey, you
they're
ever saw,
worse.
yeah, have you ever saw the if you've ever seen the documentary Supersize It or Supersize Me, this gentleman that for 30 days all he did was ate at a local fast food restaurant for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks for 30 days. When he started the experiment, he did it very scientifically. He saw his primary care physician and internist. He saw a cardiologist. He saw a nutritionist, a dietitian, spoke with all of them, and he
Hard
asked
work.
them, what do you think is going to happen at the end of the 30 days? And they're like, oh, maybe you'll gain a couple of pounds, not much more than that. By halfway through the experiment, his doctors were begging him to stop
Sure.
because, and they discovered all the chemicals and all the synthetic stuff that's in these fast foods, and every one of them causes and creates a certain level of addiction because it's targeting a specific area to create that urge to want to go and eat this kind of food.
Doctor, it's so funny. I mean, so people are watching right now, listening. Just think about this image, right? Just think about this, what I'm going to say. We have questions about cannabis, a plant that's been in existence for centuries, and people have used it in other plants as well. But here we come to regular food that we think regular food, and all of it does worse, and we're happy about it. Sugars, I mean, there is an actual company or a store that I saw the other day in Manhattan that's all sugar. I mean, everything that's in there. When you actually look, you walk around even a supermarket, I mean, start looking at the food, it's all these lists of ingredients that are like completely synthetic chemicals and so on and so forth that we have. And sometimes, like, it's almost like a what it's like an contradiction in itself of living, right? We want the healthy stuff, yet we think the healthy is healthy, and it's not, and vice versa. It's like amazing. Like, I think the one thing that you talked about social media as being also addictive, which is true, actually. We do have a show about mental health, and it's been, clear that it's a true addiction, and it's developing problems for the younger generation. But through the social media, there's positive stuff as well. I mean, we
Of
have shows
course.
like this, right? But the abundance of information that's available now, it's changing some of that. At least it's exposing some of the hidden secrets of these industries and things like that, and how they're impacting our health. So we're talking about cannabis specifically and the use and the benefits of it. I just listened to you, and through my little knowledge about it, I think it's a much better outlet, in a way to go than anything else, even including our foods that we eat on a day-to-day basis today. And again, I mean, and even when you talk about even natural, if you go just regular nutrition, you want to get some real fresh stuff. Now you got all these coatings, and you have all these protectors that they have on apples and this, and it's like unbelievable. I mean, I was overseas, and I can tell you the difference between food and here and there. I mean, I'm gonna make a joke. My daughter, she. I'm always fighting with her about, McDonald's, and I'm pretty loud about it because I know what it is. Actually, I've done the experiments myself, where you take one of these burgers and put them in, and somewhere in the fridge and stuff. Like, I had a burger, not just McDonald's, even Burger King. I had them actually on the fridge for 3 months, and I took it out, and the thing was still there. I mean, it did not actually go bad. Just again, my cats literally did not even want to eat it, and it was a fresh one. So I can tell you this. So and I and so finally, like, he said, well, okay, I crave it. Okay, let's do it. So we went to the McDonald's overseas. That food was different. I can tell you, even the ingredients list was different. So I don't know why, but it's like it's not good, folks. It's not good. What we have to deal with. So yes, and it's all destructive. I mean, I asked the question about the drugs and the impact and the side effects. I mean, cannabis probably has one of the least things. Now, I'm not for or against, you know, I'm always about information and about, you know, finding stuff. And frankly, if it's going to help people be better and do better, and it's an alternative medicine or alternative way to heal, especially from, you know, like PTSD and all these, and I know in pain management, it's a great thing, because you mentioned a list of things actually earlier. So I'd like just for you to go over that list, you know, of maybe diseases or illnesses that actually cannabis can be good for. I mean, you mentioned
absolutely. Yeah. So I'll go over the qualifying conditions in the state of Florida, because in the state of Florida, we have a set number of what are called qualifying conditions. These are conditions that if you have these conditions, you know, you go straight to the head of the class. You know, you will get your medical cannabis card, because these are named conditions. And so we start with cancer, all types of cancer. You know, today I saw this, I started 9 new patients today, and one of the gentlemen had 2 types of cancer. He had kidney cancer and he had pancreatic cancer. So 2 types of cancers at the same exact time. So cancer, and you know, and he was in to address the nausea, to address the lack of appetite, to address the pain, the lack of sleep, the anxiety, the depression, because he has 2 types of cancers, you know. And and this guy was born in 1973. I mean, he's relatively young, you know. So cancer, epilepsy and seizures. I mentioned, you know, children with intractable seizures, children that suffer with diseases that they have 200 to 300 seizures a day. Now, you're a dad. If your child was having 200 to 300 seizures a day, you'd be wanting to find something. And they keep throwing medicines at you and not your kid. They're taking 5 anti-epileptic drugs and none of them are breaking or controlling the seizures. Now you got a major issue in your hand. And so as a parent, you're going to do whatever you can to provide the best for your child. And so seizures, epilepsy is one. And, you know, once they get started in the cannabis, you'll see them drop to, you know, 4 to 5 seizures a month. Well, you know, the skeptics, the haters will say, oh, well, they're still seizing. Yeah, 4 to 5 times a month, not 200 to 300 times a day. Like, look at the math, you know. Glaucoma.
Those are good odds. I mean, when you compare.
Yeah, I'll take those numbers anyway, you know, any day. Glaucoma, you know, increased intraocular pressure in individuals, certain individuals. HIV and AIDS are qualifying conditions in the state of Florida. Primarily, again, with AIDS, because they have what's called a wasting syndrome. They lose a lot of weight. They don't have a lot of appetite. They develop these lesions on their skin. And so they use the topical creams on their skin to be able to ward off and fight off these lesions that happen on their skin. But a lot of the medicines that they are given cause other issues that cause, like, nerve pain, neuropathy. And so the cannabis helps with that type of pain, that type of discomfort. Crohn's disease is another. Multiple sclerosis is another qualifying condition. PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, you know, which is a chronically debilitating neurological and nerve condition. Parkinson's disease. And so those are the qualifying conditions that we have. Then we have terminal disease. So someone that's terminally ill. And that's defined as somebody that if we do nothing for them for one within, you know, at all, within 1 year, they will die. That's considered a terminal patient. Now, fortunately, the state of Florida has another caveat, and that is a category called like conditions. And what that means is if somebody has a condition that's equal to or greater in severity than one of the ones that I just named, they would qualify under that umbrella. So I mentioned Crohn's disease. So if somebody has irritable bowel syndrome or ulcerative colitis, then they would qualify under the umbrella of Crohn's, because those diseases are similar to that. anxiety, depression, insomnia are going to fall under the PTSD umbrella because those are symptoms that are very similar and like kind to that. I didn't mention chronic pain because people with multiple sclerosis, that nerve pain, if somebody has a herniated disc and they have pain shooting down their leg, that's very similar to that multiple sclerosis. So I like to make my practice a practice of inclusion, not exclusion. I want to make sure that they get their medicine, not block them. And so I use a lot of that like or similar condition to be able to get people to be able to get their medicine.
Thank you, Doc. That's pretty clear as far as, you know, the use of it and the conditions. You mentioned autism too earlier. So I know there's a whole different spectrum in autism. That's a whole different world.
Yeah.
And I think it does help people kind of navigate through it, you know, and because I think it comes with anxiety and different things. And
again, it helps calm them down. It helps, you know, address their meltdowns, and it helps them, you know, just overall.
Okay. Well, so there's a lot of use here. And again, you talked specifically Florida. I'm assuming there's a lot of this that actually can be mimicked, you know, in other states or very similar.
Yeah, other states have a larger list. Other states have a smaller or narrower list. Like Texas has a really, really narrow list. And then you have states like Oklahoma or Louisiana that there are no lists. It's whatever the doctor thinks would help.
Well, I'm assuming that as long as you have some sort of a pain level, I mean, you get an accident, you have broken bones, whatever, I mean, they can still qualify for it, if it's temporary, right? As long as you have some sort of a pain to manage and stuff. And I, you know, again, you're talking about, you know, elderly as well. I mean, some people have just different conditions and they need that. And so this is actually a pretty good, you know, clear understand, especially for those people in Florida. But I think obviously for every state, you know, you guys have to look and check out with your own provider there and see what those conditions may be for you. Now,
exactly.
Do you foresee any federal level changes I know we're talking about the medicine.
Were you stuff. Hanging out this weekend with me?
I had somebody there. I'm just kidding.
While you were flying from Morocco, you had your sidekick over there.
Well, we flew over. I'm just kidding. So let's talk about that.
At the federal level, yes, there is an, it's called the MORE Act, M-O-R-E, A-C-T, MORE Act. MORE, M-O-R-E stands for Marijuana Opportunity Reinvestment Expungement Act. What that means is they want to be able to decriminalize it, re or deschedule it from a Schedule 1 to a Schedule 2 or 3. So that will make it federally legal, number one. Number two, the reinvestment means that a portion of the taxes, a percentage of the sales tax for the cannabis that's sold is to be reinvested in the communities that were hardest hit by the war on drugs, i.e. the brown and black communities. So they're going to reinvest into those communities to build those communities up. And then the E, expungement, if somebody was arrested for cannabis, they will expunge their records and clean their records. So now they don't have a criminal record, and that will allow them to work, to vote, to do whatever needs to be done and be a functioning citizen in this country. So it's the MORE Act. It's passed one area in Washington, D.C., and now it's moving into another area. It lost its legs for a little bit, but now it's back up. And so that's right now the buzz on Capitol Hill.
Well, that sounds like promising. I mean, at least it sounds like if it does go through.
Yeah, it is promising. And so one of the questions that was asked, I was on a panel. I was a keynote speaker, but then I was on multiple panels. And one of the questions that was asked during one of the panels was, will the president of the United States deschedule, reschedule cannabis in 2025? And my reply was, in 2025, probably not. That's not going to happen this year.
Coming to the end, yeah.
I said, but Because 2026, you've got the midterm elections.
Mm-hmm.
To retain and maintain control, I could definitely, from a political strategic point of view, I definitely see
Winning ticket.
something happening in and around mid to late summer, right before the midterm elections, because that would be a shot in the arm to all of the red candidates.
Well, listen, I mean, certainly, I think it's a needed, vote, and it's going to change things. I mean, for one, it's going to help people who are needing it, and I think that will also open it up, for example, our world in the insurance space, and we can actually introduce some of this stuff as a part of the benefits, and so people that can really need it and use it will have it, access to it. But I think also the concept that tax money or partial, money from those taxes will go into the communities that need it most, and I think the idea of expunging and taking away some of these records, from people who really, I mean, it was not a big crime;
Well,
it
one
was
of
a
the
crime.
best things that could happen from that is the fact that by making it federally legal, now VA doctors can offer this service to the veterans who need it far more than anyone that I know of.
Oh, actually, I didn't think about that. Yeah, VA is federal, so they don't have access to it. So they have to go outside of the system. Oh, boy. Yeah, I mean, and again, Medicare, too. I mean, that's my world, and it's not. So.
Medicaid, we know you don't state, but Medicare and all your third-party payers, because they're all dictated by CMS, the rules and regulations of CMS. So whatever Medicare sets the tone sets the standard. So if it's legal at a federal level and Medicare starts to pay for it, then third-party payers will going to start paying for it. Now you're not only going to get your office visits paid for, you're also going to get your medicine paid for.
Yeah, it's I mean, again, that may be also good for the economy. There'll be more dispensaries, and I guess more, even mainstream pharmacies
I
may
like
have
the way you
access. Well, I mean, we're in the same kind of world, right? So I remember as a 33 years veteran in the insurance space and government programs, I could tell you, we work with the drugs, pharma, programs, and obviously for your PBMs and things like that, for your benefits and formularies. So we do that, and you have the pharmacy is a big component. You also have your providers, networks, and healthcare systems, and I mean, so anything that can help, I remember as an insurer, right, the first thing that you want to look for is like, how do you reduce cost and provide the best benefit, right? I mean, that's really the bottom line. I mean, insurance
And in
company
medicine,
only.
the same thing. Risk benefit ratio. Does the benefit outweigh the risk?
Well, there's a cost factor, right? If people are healthier or less, reliant on something, you will save money to the insurance and obviously to the overall population, because the cost is always sent to
Again, you had to have been up in Wisconsin, because one of the slides that I presented was on wellness and prevention, and there was a statistic that I showed them the data that for every dollar that's spent for wellness, it's $5 that you save
Illness.
in sick care and absenteeism.
Well, we say the same thing. I mean, if you don't make time for your health, you're gonna have to make time for your sickness and illness, right? It works. I mean, that's like the
You
rule
can pay me now, you can pay me
of
later.
you're paying something, right? And one is worse than the other. So choose your poison, as they say, right? Well, so doctor, thank you so much. I mean, now let's talk about the books. I mean, I know you have seven books. Are these are academic books? Are they just books for the public? And where are they available?
They are available on Amazon, and the first book, Hope and Healing: The Case for Cannabis, is available in English, in Spanish, and audio, as well as Kindle. So that's the first book. The second edition of that book is on the verge. It's being worked on right now. My editor and I are having lovers quarrel, a lover's spat right now. We've been working together for 10 years, and so we're having a little lover's spat right now. And so he's being a little passive aggressive, so I'm gonna have to, bring him back to the fold, give him a little extra cannabis and calm his ass down a little bit. But the second
Hopefully he
is,
doesn't listen to this show.
well, I want him to listen to this damn
All
thing.
right. All right, then share away.
So the second edition is on the verge of coming out. I updated it, added new information, updated some information that was no longer true or was no longer accurate. So I improved on that. And then the sixth book is a compilation of five. And the five books, what I did was I looked and I researched what are the five most commonly used, what are the five conditions that people most commonly use cannabis for. And so number one is chronic pain. Number two is cancer. Number three is multiple sclerosis. Number four is epilepsy and seizures. And number five is behavioral health, anxiety, depression, PTSD. So what I did was I wrote a book on each one of those conditions and how cannabis helps and works for each one of those things. Together with that, and so the sixth book was a compilation for that. Why did I do that? If somebody has multiple sclerosis, they're only interested in the MS and cannabis book. They don't care about epilepsy because that doesn't affect them. Now, if somebody is an advocate or someone is a physician or a nurse or nurse practitioner and they want more information, then they would get that sixth book because it has all five of those conditions in one simple book. So it makes it easier for them to do that. Those are the different books that are available. As I stated, they're all available on Amazon. The second set of books, the six books, I translated those to Spanish, and those are also being worked on to be, on the market here. Q4, I want them ready by mid to end of November, so that would come December, they're available for, stocking stuffers.
Holidays. They're around us now. Well, doctor, thank you. Now, for you, the work that you do, I mean, obviously it's in state Florida.
No, everywhere. I was just in Wisconsin advocating.
Well, the advocacy, but your physical location, like where people can.
My physical location is in Florida, but I'm also licensed in the state of Michigan. And so, but in the state of Michigan, I primarily see children. In fact, today I saw a 17-year-old that has autism. Is on the spectrum and also has seizures. And so I got him. So in Michigan, it's more of a pediatric practice, not an adult practice, because Michigan is an adult use state. So adults really don't go for a card. It's more for the children. So I'm licensed in those two jurisdictions.
No, well, thank you, doctor. So actually, you touched on the kids' side. I mean, that's a big deal for parents watching and listening that may have, conditions there where the kids have conditions. I mean, I think that they ought to reach out to you, and maybe you can guide them to whatever state they are, and hopefully, if they're in
And
Florida,
that's
they
the
can.
beauty. I can guide them. I can speak generically. I cannot give them a specific prescription or recommendation
You
because we don't
can
prescribe
connect
it,
them.
but I can connect them with somebody. Yes, absolutely.
But in Florida, I mean, you can do the same.
Florida, yeah. Florida just, yeah, it's easy to get a hold of me. I'm in North Central Florida, so I work out of four locations. Gainesville, which is the home of the University of Florida. Go Gators, not anyway. But I see patients in Gainesville. I see patients in Ocala. I see patients in a community called The Villages, which is one of the largest retirement communities in the United States. And I see patients out of the clinic in Orlando. So four locations. So it's very easy to get a hold of me.
All
And
digs.
just go online, man. I mean, Google me. It's not a pickup line, it's real.
Well, you'll be highlighted. Your link will be
Yeah,
on the description.
josephrosadomd.com is my website, but I'm all over social media. So Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok, all
You're
over.
busy. Well, you are also an
YouTube, I have
advocate.
a YouTube channel.
Well, listen, you are an advocate, so not only you're practicing, but you're also working towards, I guess, clarifying and helping other, states and other groups around the nation to stuff. Now, one quick question. You said you worked overseas as well, and you went to some of the Asian countries. Are there other countries in your visual that are actually, that may be opposed to it now, that may be in the near future working towards maybe giving access to medicinal or recreational?
The one that had the greatest promise, I don't know what's happening there now because it's been a while since I've been there, but Malaysia. Because Malaysia got their independence from the UK, from England, in the 50s. But the way the constitution was written, the penalty for being caught with cannabis is death. It's not prison. And so very similar to some of the, Middle Eastern countries, that same concept, that same ideal. And so the first time I was there, which was in late 2018, no, I take that back. It was in 2019. It was in 2018, 2019, both. Yeah, I was there both times. Let me think. No, I was there in 2019, and then I did a Zoom in 2020 because of COVID. That's it. I couldn't go because of COVID. But anyway, but when I spoke, one of the prime ministers spoke after me. I did the opening speech. He did the keynote speech. He stayed on for my presentation after his presentation, and he stayed on for the rest of the day. And he implemented the concept of training the physicians in the country so that way, when the Constitution was rewritten and that clause was removed and it was worded in a medically favorable way, that the doctors would already be prepared to take care of the patients. And so that was very proactive, that while they were working all the logistics legally, they were wanting their physicians to be prepared professionally, medically, to be able to tap into that capacity. So that was the one of the ones that showed the greatest favor. But again, once COVID got into the mix, it just was the major wrench. And any talks, any activities, anything that was happening, people became extremely overwhelmed with trying to keep their citizens alive.
I mean, understandable. It was a worldwide problem. So yeah. Well, again, I mean, that was just a question because I know you work also. You said you mentioned you go overseas a lot, and I mean, I guess Europe is a little bit similar to us. Maybe Canada, maybe Australia.
Well, Canada is adult use, the whole country. They started with a medical program in 2000, and then in 2020 they went 2018, I'm sorry, they went adult use. And so the whole country is adult use, similar to Uruguay. Uruguay is medical and adult use across the board. And so those are the two countries that have it. And then Portugal has decriminalized pretty much everything. So those are three countries that are different than everybody else.
Interesting. Well, listen, I mean, I think we're moving towards the right path here in the US, and let's see how it goes from there. I know your work, you're helping a lot of people through this process and through this work, and I mean, just taking care of people's pain and giving them better days in their lives, better sleep, less anxiety. They regain back a little bit of their life, with the family and their loved ones, and that's a big deal. Most people don't see that value that way, and so maybe that's the issue. But I think the more people know about this, the more they realize that there is a benefit to it. One question: if someone says, I'm on this and I don't want to be on it, how easy is that? I mean, because people, if we attach the concept of drug addiction, as we talked earlier. You mentioned that this is something you can literally stop. I mean, you can just drop it and not, there's no problem. For someone that's actually had that question, what do you tell them?
For what? To like stop cannabis?
Yeah, I mean, I know we're pro here, but if someone was on it and they don't need it anymore for whatever reason, is it easy for them to stop?
Then just stop.
No side effect. No
No, minimal to
withdrawals,
no
no nothing.
withdrawal. Yeah.
Damn. We should have started with that one. I mean, I mean, think about it, right? Because there's a lot of fear, right? There's always fear,
Oh
when you
yeah.
start something. So I think you as a doctor, you do go through this stuff with your patients so
Yeah,
they
no,
can
you're
get the
not gonna,
benefit.
I mean, it's not like coming off of pain medicine that you get nausea, you get vomiting, you get diarrhea, you get the chicken skin, the goosebumps all over your body, the chills, You wish you were dead. Your body aches, and you don't get that.
Yeah, maybe the goosebumps.
Yeah.
Well,
You're gonna.
I know there's a good side effect, the munchies. Is that a true thing?
That is a true thing. Like, and as I mentioned, people that have wasting syndrome, AIDS, cancer, the nausea, they can't eat. Yeah, it opens up their appetite. But there are certain terpenes and phytocannabinoids that control appetite. And I've had patients that have lost as much as 100 pounds with the
Whoa.
cannabis. One, because by using the cannabis, it's helped their pain. So now they're more active, so they're able to exercise. But using these substances to help curb their appetite, it helps them lose weight and tone up. So yeah, it's not all munchies.
Oh, thank you. I mean, again, that's probably news to everyone watching and listening. I mean, we think about the munchies, but nobody had ever said that, hey, we can actually lose weight with this thing. It's better than
I'm
Ozempic.
not saying anything. I don't need the people. I don't need that. I don't need that big pharma coming after me.
No. Well, again, I mean, it's a joke, but really, I mean, there's a lot of talk
It's
about,
true.
how Ozempic is the new thing, to lose weight, right? So
Yeah,
this
I
is
mean, at
this
the
is.
Ryder Cup, that's what they were screaming at a lot of the European players. Hey, how about some Ozempic, fat boy? I mean, it got ugly.
Well, I know. I mean, they have suits going on, I think, or something like that now. But yeah, listen, not our rodeo, right? But well,
Right.
so doctor, I know we're coming to the end of the show. So first, I want to thank you for being with us and really giving us a full spectrum of what cannabis is. The whole, I mean, we've gone deep dive today. Like we went to the legislator, level. We went
No, we
to
covered a
the
lot today in
end.
just a short
And
span of time.
well, an hour and a half. I mean, we went over time, but you know what? It was worth it. And I threw in some crazy questions, I guess, or like sideline questions, but they just popped out of my head. But so before we actually leave and part ways today, anything that you want to leave our audiences with as an advice, from a medical or a doctor and or an advocate?
Absolutely. And it's my hashtag that I write when I sign my books, and that is hashtag cannabis is medicine.
I think I can beat that. I mean, it's as simple as that.
It's that simple.
Well, I'm gonna have to use that on the description, so it's literally there. So that's your signature. We're gonna keep that in there. All right. Well, doctor, thank you so much for being with us. You're enlightening me. I think you've delivered a lot to our audiences, and it's worldwide, so people can get a little bit of flavor, no matter where they are. And I love the idea that your book's also translated, so there's the language, limitations that is removed, so there's more people that can actually learn from it. And you're in Florida. Yeah, so there's a lot of activity there. It's a big state, as you said. A lot of people are moving to Florida, or at least vacationing. Now that's the thing. Like they can be there and still get access, right? I mean, they're just not going to get the
Not
medical
if
visa.
they're vacationing, no. They either have to be a state resident or what's called a seasonal resident, which is a snowbird. So the people that during the summer and early fall live up north and they spend their winters and early spring here, those people can have, a card here, or they're a state resident. But if you're just vacationing, no.
What's the residency? 6 months to 120 days?
Exactly, 6 months.
So you have to be 6 months and over and said, all
At
right, well,
least.
listen, sorry guys, I tried, but it didn't work
Yeah,
out. So you know what to do. Snowbirding is the next thing.
become a snowbird, become a
That's
seasonal
it.
resident.
All right. All right. All right. Well, doctor, thank you so much. Thank you too much. I took a lot of your time, but I think it was worth it, for our audiences.
It's
So
my honor and pleasure,
I had
and
fun.
once again, my deepest sympathy on the loss of your mom.
Thank you. And listen, it's part of life. I wish, we had this discussion before. Maybe I could have helped her, towards her latter part. But, I mean, they tried and morphine didn't do anything. So, but
Well,
sadly,
she's definitely in a better place and not in pain or suffering anymore.
listen, amen to that. And, we kind of got ourselves, adjusted to that fact. And it's always a good way to think about it that way. Well, thank you, doctor, for that. And, folks, again, we're coming to the end of the show here. So I'm Herc Nish. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. It was fun and interesting and enlightening. So that being said, we'll be talking soon with Danish on the topic. Bye for now.